We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. Man, Ray leaves the studio, Nick comes in and hides my mic. That's a fun little trick. Welcome into December. And welcome into Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game. Now you can hear me. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next 2.5 hours, as long as we keep the mic in front of my face, we got you live from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Going to begin with LSU, Joe Burrow, what comes next for the Tigers, and a very interesting result on the Plains from this weekend. You want to jump in? Get with us quickly. 706-0111. Transfer market going well. Joe Burrow is now the best example of what can happen with the modern transfer portal. I think that Jalen Hurts right now in Oklahoma, not too shabby either. But the reality is this, for as much bad as we project about that transfer portal, look at what has transpired over the last 15 months and the love affair between Joe Burrow and LSU, and of course LSU Nation and Joe Burrow. All of it just emphatically celebrated with the B-U-R-R-E-A-U-X Burrow jersey during LSU's, or prior to LSU's, beatdown of Texas A&M. That was one heck of a moment inside Tiger Stadium. And a lot of people were pretty geeked about watching LSU go 12-0. But I'll share this with you. You saw that same thing happen 8 years ago. This one feels different. And this one feels incredibly special. Because while LSU fans were enamored with the Honey Badger, this time around, this Burrow guy, a little bit more approachable, right? You love him. He loves you. It's just a huge love affair right now. And never has somebody that's been injected into a culture in college football taken to it more as an outsider, in my opinion, than Joe Burrow with Louisiana and with LSU. And so for me, that's my one big takeaway from what was a really cool moment and a special night in Death Valley. LSU puts up that 50 burger, Clint, that we were talking about. I hung a line of 51.5 for LSU. They limboed under, brother, but not by much. High scoring, never doubted that would happen. Large margin in victory, I never doubted that would happen either. And so here's LSU at 12-0, and a historic season continues. An opportunity to move forward into Atlanta this weekend and beyond and finish something off that 2011 group never could. 2017, they lost two games. 03 group, lost to Chris Leak in Florida in the rain. This team has a chance to run the table and be perfect. They've got an opportunity to get to 15-0 and stamp home one of the greatest seasons in college football history. And again, beating down Texas A&M in the process, hey, that's just Lanya. The opportunity to pay back 7 overtimes last year. Print the score, put it on a cup, put it on the rings. Put it in Jimbo's office. Hey, put it wherever you want. But just know that right now the record shows since A&M has entered the SEC, it's one-way traffic, and it's not even close. And that sets up a fourth meeting between LSU and Georgia in Atlanta since 2003. Happened in 03, 05, that 2011 season that I've already mentioned a few times, and 2019. And interesting that LSU opens up as a 7-point favorite in that ball game. I'll shoot you straight. I thought it would be more. In fact, I've told you that on this program the last couple of weeks. Ever since LSU beat Bama, it's been my opinion that Georgia's offense isn't ready to play keep up, or especially catch up, with Burrow and LSU's offense. Yes, Georgia scored, 56 in beating up on Georgia Tech in Atlanta on Saturday. They were abysmal in the first half of that ball game, and one of their leading receivers for Georgia won't be able to play for at least the first half of the SEC title game after some fisticuffs in Bobby Dodd Stadium in the ATL. And so it's interesting that the game is only a 7-point spread in LSU's favor. I think they've got a chance to be more demonstrative than that. And I do believe that LSU, especially if the Tigers come in at number 2 tomorrow evening, final regular season dropping of the college football playoff rankings, I think a number 2 LSU team comes out incredibly motivated for that game. And so if you root for the purple and gold and you can hear my voice, trust me when I tell you, you want LSU to be number 2 tomorrow night. Now, I watched just about every second of that Ohio State and Michigan game. If Ohio State has been deemed the more complete team because of their defense, I didn't see it, especially for the first half of that ball game. Chase Young was a non-factor. They've got some good players. There's no question. Ohio State is unquestionably one of the top 3 teams in the country. They deserve to be there. I don't know that they are the undeniable number 1. And that complete defense was shredded by Shea Patterson in the first half of that ball game. Things changed, especially after Patterson and company fumbled down near the goal line, and the game went to hell in a handbag late in the second quarter for the Wolverines. But I think it's an opportunity for LSU, if they can be number 2 going into the Georgia game, to stay more grounded, more focused. And then I think they might come out of that title game in Atlanta at number 1, heading into the college football playoffs. Now, who might LSU play in that scenario? That's where I want to end today's opening segment, because Bama is officially eliminated. First time since we've had these college football playoffs, no Bama. And the memes, they're fantastic. Bama's not going unless they buy tickets. All the Nick Saban throwing the headset and just prancing and stomping around like a pissed off kid. All of those memes are hilarious on the internet, and I am here for them. But the reality of the situation now becomes this. With Bama out, who's next? Because I can tell you, I still believe Georgia beats LSU, especially if it's close. Both of those two are in, along with Clemson and Ohio State. However, with an LSU win, is it going to be Utah? Is it going to be Oklahoma? Could it possibly be Baylor? We'll find out. My early leader in the clubhouse, again, it depends on how you win your conference title game. My early prediction for you is that if LSU holds serve, beats Georgia, and the other favorites win their conference title games, I think Oklahoma is going to leapfrog Utah. I don't think Baylor's got a shot no matter what. So if Oklahoma wins, I think they're in. If Baylor wins, I think Utah's in. That's what I think is most likely to happen. Of course, Minnesota eliminated themselves with the loss this past weekend to Wisconsin. Let's take our first call of the afternoon. We get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Chad, how goes it on a Monday?
Very good. Ben, one thing about the Ohio State-Michigan, if you watch the whole game, I think Michigan missed every other pass, probably 12 or 13 passes. Michigan is not good to me at all. To me, still, Ohio State, they're a great team, but they haven't really proven themselves. I mean, they have better quarterbacks than last year than Wisconsin does as a starter. Ben, I'm very surprised about Georgia and the regression that Fromm's made, and not keeping the receiver, not keeping his head, which I thought would have might have happened to a Coach O team, which they didn't. They kept their head, and they've been so much more focused. I think Saturday is going to be a rout, 13, 14 points. And I remember at the beginning of the season, you said that Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia were in the league by themselves. If LSU beats Georgia, are you going to LSU and Georgia, man? I'll take your call. I'll listen to you off the air, brother. Thank you.
I appreciate you taking my call. No, I'm with you there, Chad. And I did say that, and I think that was accurate prior to this season, that technically speaking, it was Bama-Clemson, however you wanted to rank those two, and that you would have to put Georgia, Ohio State, Oklahoma in that next tier. But I thought that Georgia probably deserved to be ahead of them, right? Well, if we're looking at the results of this season, if we're looking at the recruiting that affects the near future, I think it's incredibly fair to say that right now LSU deserves to be right up in the mix with that entire group. And no, you don't kick Alabama out of that club just based off of not making the college football playoff for the first time ever. But I do think that out of everybody else that's putting a bid in, LSU, far and away, deserves to be considered a front runner nationwide moving forward. Again, you're going to ask me to rank them. It's kind of hard to do that right now. But 12-0 should speak for itself. There are three teams in major college football that have done that so far to this point. LSU's one of them, and they've played the toughest schedule of those three. That's a pretty defining and emphatic statement. And so no doubt about it. LSU goes into this one. I'm with you, Chad. I think it's a two-score game for LSU. And I'll also tell you this, since I did watch not just this week with Ohio State, but I caught a good bit of last week as well when they beat Penn State. And there is a very clear and emerging pattern about Fox battling the mothership and trying to counter some perceived SEC bias. I will carve out time on that topic in our 4 o'clock hour today. I promise you I will, because it slapped me across the face, and shame on me for not fully internalizing it from last week's Ohio State game that I watched. But I got some things on my mind that I must share with that, and trust me, I will. Before we head to a break, I will take one final call. Frank is waiting for us aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. How are you, Frank?
I'm doing great. I'd like to thank Chad for his comments, because I agree with everything he said. I'm not impressed by Ohio at all. What's there is nothing to be measured against. But as you brought up in your opening statement, Joe Burrow took a big piece of duct tape and taped himself to the hearts and minds of all LSU Tiger fans when he had that jersey on. I was moved by what he did, and it just shows you how much love that he has gained for LSU, and man, it was awesome.
It was, and I think it deserves to be remembered that way historically. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Ben.
Never has a transfer taken to an unknown area and its people the way that Joe Burrow has LSU, and absolutely vice versa. It's never happened before, ever. And again, this is an example of the transfer market going well. I don't know that this will be the rule. I think it's probably more the exception, but it's been pretty darn cool to watch the transformation. All right, I got to get our guest list in and shout them out. We're going to work on getting Gus Kattengill on at 4:30. It may have to be 4:45. My man's doing some things for the New Orleans Pelicans franchise right now. But we want to talk Saints with Gus. We'll do that best we can latter part of this hour. Again, Gus Kattengill from New Orleans before 5. At 5:15, Ruffin Rodrigue. And at 6 o'clock, a man who shared not a press box, but a set of bleachers with me in New Orleans on Black Friday night, James Buers. We'll talk LCA, STM, and Acadiana still balling in the high school football playoffs. Big, big show today. Don't you dare go anywhere. And after a timeout, you'll have more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Some pretty interesting real news and fake news when it comes to college football coaching carousel earlier this afternoon. Let me share that with you, and then we'll go straight fact on three things that happened this weekend. I'll get your take on which was the most pleasing for you. Yeah, give me a moment. I'll get there. But interesting, Chris Peterson, pretty widely heralded as one of the best coaches in college football, stepped down. Seriously, resigned as the head coach of the Washington Huskies earlier today. He's going to take an administrative position with the university. And I've seen at least one report that this is not health-related. It's hard to believe that this isn't some, you know, set-up checkers move, right? To where he's about to double jump toward the USC job or something bigger and better. I don't know, maybe like the Dallas Cowboys job because they keep losing, which is great. I think that genuinely this man is trying to step away from the sport for a little bit. and wants to be put into a position where he's not the AD, but has an opportunity to maybe work with some of the coaches, the athletic department on campus, and do leadership development. But just an odd story out of the great Northwest. Chris Peterson, formerly at Boise State, now at Washington, stepping down as head coach. Now, the fake news, it actually followed some real news. Matt Luke is done as head coach at Ole Miss. You know, one time your guy fakes pissing on a hydrant like a dog, you lose the Egg Bowl, you get fired, I guess. But it happened that way. Matt Luke is out in Oxford. That part's real. The fake news came when a couple of fake Twitter accounts said that Mike Leach, the head pirate, is the new head coach in Oxford. Be interesting if he became that, but right now it is not the case. And yet, it's not going to stop a lot of people from throwing Billy Napier's name out there. He was the subject of a lot of rumors about Mississippi State and maybe replacing Joe Moorhead. I'm going to get to Napier later in today's show because I've got thoughts on the UL head coach who just led the Cajuns to a historic 10-win regular season. It's remarkable what he's done. As for what happens next, I've got some thoughts. But I did tell you that I would lob out your sink or swim question of the day. Clint, let's hit the music. And then after this, just know that there are no losers. Exciting and new. I'm going to give you three options, and the answer is yes. I realize that. They're all winners here, but I'm curious if one of them stands above the others for you. Here's your sink or swim question of the day. Which event pleased you the most Thanksgiving weekend? Is it LSU beating A&M? Is it the Saints beating the Falcons? Or is it Alabama losing to Auburn in the Iron Bowl? Call us up. Let us know. But hit us quickly at 706-0111. Clint, which one is it for you?
For me, Ben, I think it's option C. We got to say it's Alabama losing to Auburn. I think it all largely because of the fact, one, it's Alabama losing. That's always fun to kind of laugh at. But number two, it's the fact that this pretty much secures that for the first time since the 2008 season, an Alabama team is not involved in a BCS or CFP national title game. And I think Louisiana definitely, it's a good feeling right about now.
So what exactly happened in the 2010 season when Cam Newton and Auburn played a national championship that didn't involve
Alabama? The state of Alabama.
Ah, okay. That's an important, it's an important little disclaimer there. The state of Alabama. Yes. Okay. I was going to have to pull your card there for a second. But now we're on board. The Yellowhammer State has been ruled out. I'm completely there with you. Hey, who wants to join the party now, CD, and give us their 2 cents?
Frank's wanting to go full Costanza, do a little double dip on this.
Oh, Lord. All right, it's going to have to be quick. Let's go to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Frank, you've got about 10 seconds. Which one pleased you the most?
Loved LSU. Thought it was fantastic. Alabama being out, fantastic. But you got to enjoy it when Matt Ryan gets full-on pancake trying to tackle a 600-pound man. Later.
That ain't bad. That ain't bad for Frank.
That's really good.
He went with the brevity thing, and I don't know that he caught 10 seconds, but no more than 14 or 15. So he made his point, and there's no doubt about it. Shy Tuttle's stiff arm heard round the world. That was one of the most gratifying football plays to watch in a long, long time. So I respect the answer from Frank. Clint, I am going to tell you, I think it is Alabama losing to Auburn. And I gave you this all Thanksgiving week long. It's a rivalry week in college football. You've got Saints-Falcons, so you extend the rivalry there. I will always contend that hatred of your rivalry in sport is greater than love of self in sport. I just feel that way. And so I'm not going to buck that trend here. Alabama losing the way they did, multiple pick sixes, one of which goes off the receiver's back and has taken a hundo. Special teams looming large again, and one of their kickers missing, getting outfoxed on a middle school playground. Wide receiver is actually a punter formation by Gus. I mean, there was nothing not to enjoy about that. Nick stomping up and down here, there, and everywhere, saying after the game that that punt formation I just talked about was an unfair way and an unfair play to end the game on. If that isn't sustaining you here on this Monday, I don't know how to help you, so I'm not trying to take away from LSU or the Saints, but I do think it's Alabama losing to Auburn because of the way it happened and what it means, right? The implications. Roll Tide. Yeah, just don't roll into those playoffs, dog. Let's get out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. The Antagonator is waiting. What you got for us, Antagonator?
Oh, man, it has to be LSU just putting the foot on the throat of Texas A&M. And did you see the look on Jimbo's face? On top of it, I just won the fact that Don Allen has to buy me lunch because he bet me LSU wouldn't go 12-0. So it's been a classic weekend.
Make sure you go somewhere as pricey as possible for that lunch. That's a good win for you.
I'm going to see if he'll take me to Ruth Chris.
There it is. There it is. Go get you a steak. Good talking with you, brother. I like that. I like that a lot. And so, you know, I can tell you that he'll be available Wednesday at 8 p.m. And so he'll do his show here and then maybe a little dinner at Ruth's Chris where you can discuss LSU taking it to 12-0 for the season. Not bad at all. We're about to take it to our second break in today's program. Having a lot of fun, and why not? LSU's 12-0. Saints are 10-2. Cajuns are 10-2. It's been as good a season, regular season, in South Louisiana as maybe we've ever seen. We'll continue to discuss. We'll have Gus Kattengill either at 4:30 or at 4:45. Wherever we don't have him, I'm going deep on two topics, Napier and the potential of flying the coop, what it means and why, and then the theme that I discussed in the opening segment, Fox football bias. I'm going to attack both of those. Stick with us. After a brief timeout, you've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Raging Cajuns, 10-2, regular season. Clint, that's better than where you had it. Ben, that's better than where you had it, too. Well, we're calling people out, and how do we know? Because it's better than they've ever been, 10-2. It's absolutely historic. They deserve incredible pats on the back. They deserve raises. The tough part might just become keeping them, especially Billy Napier, and I want to play off of that. But before that, I want to play at least one clip from Billy Napier's press conference today. Napier was asked about the rematch with App State. This will be the fourth time in 2 years that these programs will play, and the third time that this game will be contested at the home of the Mountaineers. And so Napier was asked about what it's like when you play a rematch, and he went right to the chessboard.
Yeah, I mean, it's the right mix of, you know, what do you, you know, you maybe you took some things away from them last time. You know what, you know, there's always a little bit of a chess match relative to, you know, what you had success with. And maybe what you didn't have success with, the right mix of those things, you know. But I think both teams have got a good identity. You know, I think that's one of the reasons we're in the championship game. We kind of know who we are, that they very much do, and I think we do too. And it's going to come down to players making plays, players executing in critical moments, you know, effort, strain, fundamentals, good decision making, great communication, and that's what we're going to spend our time on.
Cajuns survive a wild one and literally ice the ULM kicker to beat the Warhawks 31-30 over the weekend. One day prior, App State beat up on Troy. And so we've got the rematch everybody wanted. It'll be UL at number 25, App State, 11 a.m. kickoff. Mountaineers installed as early 6.5-point favorites. Now, we'll have a lot of time this week to dive into that game, and trust me, we will. But my phone went bat bleep crazy all day Black Friday regarding Billy Napier and the rumor that was running fairly rampant that there was a deal behind closed doors that Napier would be the next head coach at Mississippi State and that you would see Joe Moorhead ousted. I don't know how much the Egg Bowl result changes those things, and I'm going to tell you right here, right now, I have not barked up a tree to go grab any form of inside information on this subject. And so I am speaking clearly, outside looking in, but there is one thing that I do see clearly about this situation. You can't become the next head coach at Alabama by going directly from UL. And I'm not even saying that that is Napier's end goal in all of this. But one thing I feel very certain about at this point, Dabo Swinney's not going to be the next head coach at Alabama. If you're waiting for that next shoe to drop, you're going to be waiting a long, long time, and then it just isn't going to happen for you. Saban is 68 years old. He clearly has more time left in this game. But there's nothing, if I'm Dabo Swinney, that would cause me to leave the situation that he's in. Nothing whatsoever. He's in a perfect situation. Jimbo Fisher's gone from Florida State. He doesn't have a true foe. In the ACC, he has built an absolute juggernaut. His team is 12-0, and people are yawning past it this season. And they're freaks. He'll have a future number one overall pick in Trevor Lawrence. Travis Etienne just wrapped up a phenomenal junior season. He's got a really, really good team and a great thing going. But my point would be this. Mississippi State doesn't have a vacancy, although a lot of people were speculating they would and that Napier's next. Ole Miss now actually does have a vacancy, and a lot of people are speculating that Billy Napier could be next. This is exactly the situation that you want to be in if you're Dr. Brian Maggard and UL. No, you don't want to lose a talent like Napier. But all you could ever ask for is to grab a rising star on his way up. Now, prior to last week, I certainly was of the belief, I think they keep him for one more year. I think they have him through 2020, and then maybe it gets sticky. Because one thing I'm not sure about, I don't know if that's the ceiling, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, on how high that Napier could climb for that next job. I do know this from having talked to the man enough. He absolutely loves it here. His staff loves it here. It's part of the reason they didn't take jobs when they had a lot of opportunities after their first season here in Cajun country. But one thing that is abundantly clear to me, you can be a head coach at Mississippi State, have some level of success there, and become, oh, I don't know, Dan Mullen, who's now the head coach at Florida. Pretty prestigious job, right? The Florida Gators. If you're Billy Napier, you could be the head coach at, say, Mississippi State and leapfrog into that job at Alabama when Nick Saban is gone. I'm not telling you that's his end goal, but you can get to Tuscaloosa from Starkville. You cannot get to Tuscaloosa from Lafayette, Louisiana. And it's just a simple fact of the matter. And it's going to be impossible for that reason alone to keep the man here, whether it's this offseason, the next offseason. And just look at what he's done. 10-2 is incredible. I don't care that they lost to two ranked teams, or at least Mississippi State, and then ranked App State on their schedule, and beat everybody else who you would say they should have, they went undefeated on the road. You know how hard that is at any level of football? They curb-stomped some pretty good teams this year, teams that have given the Cajuns fits in years past. Troy, Georgia Southern, home, road, didn't matter. They crushed some of these teams. Yes, it was closer than expected against ULM, but, man, what a season for the Raging Cajuns. Now, can you keep your head coach? It is going to be a challenge. Some of these SEC vacancies that are out there, Arkansas, of course, is open. But if I'm Napier, I don't touch that Arkansas job with a 1 million-foot pole. One of those jobs in Mississippi, though, that might be a different story. That is a major platform where you can really do some things and get to that next level, whether it's replacing Saban in Alabama or who knows what comes open and when it comes open. I think Chris Peterson at Washington today proved to us that these things can absolutely happen when nobody is expecting it. So I wanted to make sure to discuss that in the opening hour today. It's incredible what they've done. Now the tough job is keeping them. Something else. I touched on it, Clint, and I'll mention it, and then here's what we'll do. We'll take a break and bring along Gus Kattengill to talk Saints in our final segment of this hour. I told you that I watched the Fox pregame show and even the game for Ohio State, Penn State, and then Ohio State, Michigan the last 2 weeks. Fox is absolutely 100% countering a perceived SEC bias from the mothership. It is a very, very real thing. They openly talk about Ohio State as the unquestioned number one team in the country. Reggie Bush, who didn't even play at Ohio State or in the Big Ten, proclaimed them maybe the best Ohio State team of all time. one of the best college football teams of all time. LSU is doing straight up historic things right now in Baton Rouge. And if you watch that pregame show and that broadcast, the Tiger season doesn't really even exist. They begrudgingly include Joe Burrow in the Heisman race when they talk about it. They put up a graphic and they say, you know, Joe Burrow's doing some great things, but Justin Fields is coming. It's incredible. And it's become more politicized than I thought. I just didn't know that we were at that point. And maybe that's shame on me, that my naivete. But it's really remarkable. And it's kind of ironic when you think about it because of how conservative, from a political standpoint, Fox is. Well, here we go. And ESPN is the one that waves the flag of Dixie, apparently, and Fox has to come in with your liberal Big Ten and Pac-12 football. We live in a weird, weird world, but be aware of that bias and don't fall for it.
Oh, it really is there. I mean, you brought it up perfectly how this Heisman Trophy conversation you saw like right after, because Justin Fields got injured on one play, a couple plays later comes back, leads him to a touchdown.
And he's really, really good.
He is really good, but is he Heisman Trophy worthy? He's probably top three, but he's not going to win the damn thing. It's Joe Burrow's right here. The thing's already engraved at this point.
And it's an overall discounting of the conference, and so it's just funny. It really
is. It's amazing.
Because of what you see with the mothership, obviously, you know, the Mickey Mouse Network owns the SEC Network. And because of all of that and the perceived SEC bias, they're literally trying to plant flags in the mind of, I guess, the college football viewing populace, of the college football playoff selection committee, that, hey, we're here too. And if we tell you we're number one, then damn it, we're number one. And that must be that. It was amazing to take it in and realize just where the game has gone to. And I don't know that it's going to get better. I think that might only take us down a dirtier, darker path. We got to hit a path toward our final break of the hour. When we return, let's talk Saints over Falcons and get ready for Saints, Niners, and so much more. Gus Kattengill when we return. And after a brief timeout, you've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports. Time to catch up with our man on Saints football. Let's take it down to New Orleans aboard the Arco Equipment Hotline. Gus Kattengill, host of the Sports Hangover, ESPN 100.3 in the Big Easy. Gus, how are you?
Ben, how you doing this afternoon, man?
Life is pretty good here, and I think if you're Taysom Hill, Thursday night couldn't have gone better in Atlanta. What can't he do at this point?
No, man. How important is he to this team, too, right? I mean, you go back to last year, the pump black against Tampa, I would say changed the season, but was the key part, right? When you look at the timeline of being able to secure, you know, the home field throughout the postseason, and you just see the possibility of maybe how important he can be in the final quarter of the season here with four games left, man. But look, Alvin Kamara hasn't been the Alvin Kamara that we've seen in seasons past, and when you don't exactly have the best receiving core and things of that nature, you need an offensive spark, I guess is what I'm trying to get to, Ben. And he's been an offensive spark.
What would you say about the state of the Saints offensive line right now, dealing with without Andres Pete, some injuries here, there, and a couple other places as well? Is that a group you think is going to be able to hold up in time for the Saints to make the playoff run everybody wants them to?
I think when I look at it, I'm thankful, since we just got done with Thanksgiving, I'd say I'm thankful, Ben, that they have the slate of games they do. And I don't mean that to be, you know, overly encouraging or disrespectful to those teams. But, you know, you look at the 49ers, and, you know, they play the Saints, Falcons, and then it's the Rams and Seahawks. You look at Green Bay, and after this coming game, it's Bears, Vikings, and Lions for them. The Saints play the 49ers here on Sunday, a Colts team that's playing well, but I think they can beat here at home. It's the final home game of the year. They go to Tennessee. I get Ryan Tannehill, 5-1, and they're playing better football. And then you have the Panthers. I'm hoping that game in Carolina doesn't really matter or mean much, right? But I guess what I'm getting at is none of those teams, other than this Sunday, my fearing their defensive line, if that makes any sense to you, right? You're not looking at those games going, man, is Drew going to be alive after those games? So I think if you're going to get them healthy and hope that they can sort of make that run that you're talking about, Ben, it's a little different and better than I think last year, where they had to play some physical teams in games towards the end of the season when their offensive line wasn't healthy.
Gus, what's your early take on this San Francisco team coming to the Dome on Sunday? They just played a whale of a game. Absolutely, yeah. Two of the best teams in the NFL, 49ers, fall to the Ravens. Your make on this team?
There's three things, right? One, Kyle Shanahan got the Falcons to the Super Bowl, and you can see the difference in that offense with him, and since he left to become head coach with the 49ers. He made mistakes in the play calling that cost him that Super Bowl, but you saw what his formula is sort of based on, and that's having a backfield that can run and catch out of the backfield, those running backs, you know, which is why Coleman is there from Atlanta. You see that you got to have a quarterback that can kind of move in the pocket and make some good throws. You've seen Jimmy G play very well. They got a good defense. And I understand, you know, the logic of, hey, well, who have they played and stuff. But what I think of them is, one, Kyle Shanahan's pretty good. He's a good coach. So you know what you're going to get offensively out of him. They have a very good young and athletic defense, too. Well, because they've been picking high in the draft the last couple of years. So some of those players are going to hit. And three, to the adage of, well, in who they've played, I get it. You still have to win the games. It's still the NFL. It's not a guaranteed win no matter who you play. You know, I mean, the Dolphins you would think would be as much guaranteed. They're winning games. You look at the Bengals, right? They have no win. They're winning games. So you still have to go up and win. And I think at some point, even if you're not playing good competition, when you get out to, what, 8-9-0, before you get your first loss, you're still winning that many games without losing. So then I think confidence builds, and I think you do become a good team. So that's my number one thing, Ben, that I'm looking for on Sunday. How do the Saints stack up with the 49ers and vice versa? Who is the better team?
Talking Saints football with Gus Kattengill and 103.7 The Game. Obviously, that one will be paramount in determining home field advantage. I think tonight's got a lot to say about that as well. Who would you prefer to see win? It's a three-loss Vikings team at a two-loss Seahawks team that the Saints already have a tiebreaker with.
Man, I think I've told you this already. You know, in some matchups, we've seen it in the past, where there's Anthony Davis take on the Jazz or Philly and some of the players. Minnesota is another one. There's some teams that just match up really well against you. And the way you would look at it from the other way is you just don't want to see them. You know, just for some reason, Minnesota's always matched up with the Saints. It doesn't matter the who's the quarterback, who's the team, or what they are. They always are a tough-nosed football team. And look, they're well-coached. They got a dynamic back in Dalvin Cook. If good Kirk Cousins shows up, he's a good quarterback. They got receivers, and they don't fear the Saints. That's a matchup that I just think, I don't know if it bodes well, and it's going to be a tough competition in game. You have the tiebreaker in Seattle, like you're mentioning already. And in that game, the Saints showed that they could go toe-to-toe and be physical with them on the road. Now, how would it look again with a second meeting here in the Dome? I don't know. But I guess I'm going Seattle, Ben.
Gus, how do you think the Saints performed defensively against the Falcons? We understand, like you mentioned, without Kyle Shanahan and Julio Jones didn't play in that ball game. Their offense is a little suspect, to say the least. How would you grade out Dennis Allen's defense and their effort?
I think it was the right game that they needed at the right time on a short week, right? They have had a bad season in protecting Matt Ryan. The numbers and the times he's been sacked are shattering what he's been sacked any time before in his career. So you see that six-sack performance, four from Cam Jordan. These are things that you want to see and you're happy about, and it helps that back end too. So I thought the performance was great from this aspect of it. You feasted on a team that you could, and you shut it down. Look, you field any of these onside kicks, the score is a little bigger than that. And if the offense can just start kind of meshing and putting touchdowns instead of field goals, they control that game. I never thought at any point, Ben, watching on Thursday, that you felt Atlanta was better than you.
Right.
And you go back to that first meeting, you gave them the game. You kept giving them opportunities and penalties to extend their drives, and they still only beat you, you know, 26-9 or whatever it was. So I think when you look at that game, the defensive performance was what I needed to see, because you hadn't really seen it, Ben, since Drew Brees has been back. You saw them step up when Teddy Bridgewater was the quarterback. Really hadn't seen it with Drew, though.
Saints advance to 10-2. They've got the Niners in town coming on Sunday. Looking forward to it. Gus, always great catching up. We'll talk again soon.
For sure, man. Thanks for the patience today, buddy.
Anytime, brother. That's Gus Kattengill, and they're doing some pretty cool things. Again, he and our man, Jake Madison, that would be Mr. Twitter, Tinder Tuesday for you. They're doing some stuff on Twitch for the New Orleans Pelicans franchise. Clint, what in the hell is a Twitch?
Twitch, well, I mean, first of all, that's sometimes when I get nervous, but this is a different story entirely. It's actually a really cool streaming service, a little more live streaming, and actually talked with Josh Hart, actually caught a little bit of it because I was just wanted to see how long it would take for
Please,
our guy to wrap
yes.
up.
Please do tell our listeners what you were doing as opposed to producing this
show.
This
is during the break, thankfully.
Yeah, okay. I don't believe you. All right, so it's good to have aboard Gus Kattengill. It's good to talk some Saints. I would remark, looking at that Saints defense, that they're making some big splash plays, but they're not really where you want them to be going into the playoffs, which is good because they've got a few more weeks to iron that out. It's exactly what Gus said. They've got a schedule in front of them that will allow them to get healthy, get right, and gain some continuity. Hard to argue with six sacks. Four for Cam Jordan. I mean, from the first defensive play of the game on, you saw engagement from Marcus Davenport as well. All of that, stupendous. But again, we're looking at two straight weeks. It was Caroline and Kyle Allen the week prior where I feel like the Saints are making big splash plays, but they're still, in certain cases, getting bludgeoned. I mean, it happened with Calvin Ridley, decent amount, for the Falcons. Again, some of the special team stuff, the recoveries that Gus referenced, yeah, that played a big part too, no doubt. I don't know, Clint. That, for me, that's one thing. This defense isn't yet playing championship-style football, and I'm not sure that the offense is, say, what, you know, Breeze and that group has been in the past, or say what Joe Burrow and company are now. So that defense is going to have to do more than just make some big plays. They're going to have consistent stops when they get up against some of these offensive juggernauts in the playoffs.
Exactly. That's going to be the biggest key going forward. But right now, at the end of the day, you're winning games. You're 10-2 right now and on the verge. I mean, if you win this game against San Francisco on Sunday, you have every chance of finishing the season 14-2, 13-3, and possibly have a home field advantage. That's what you want, right?
No question. And winning against the Niners means that you have dubs over both of those NFC West frontrunners. Still weird to not mention the Rams in that group. But, yeah, I mean, if you are 11-2 and you have wins over the Niners and the Seahawks, you're really, really close to being able to write your own ticket. All right, we got to ride our way out of this first hour. We do that, as always, with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Odd. And when you're talking about the locales for the Division 1, 2, 3, and 4 state championship football games in the state, it is odd to say the least. My alma mater, Catholic Baton Rouge and Rummel, they're going to play at Uelmann Stadium. Hey, we expected that one. It was determined earlier today that Wachita Christian and Catholic Point Capi in Division 4 are going to play in the Superdome, something that none of us thought was possible. And with our local teams in Division 2, it'll be STM at home at Cougar Stadium. We've got a cool announcement on that front. In the 5 o'clock hour in Division 3, LCA will be at Cajun Field. Four championships, four locations, most of which you didn't learn about until 6 or 7 days before the game would be played. Odd, to say the very, very least. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming back. Ruff and Rodri will join us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one. We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next hour and a half, you've got Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Ruff and Rodri coming aboard less than 12 minutes. from this very moment. James Buers at Straight Up 6 o'clock. We'll talk about those select high school football championships. And we got to get to Acadiana High. The Wrecking Rams rolling through the Class 5A playoffs. And now they've got a familiar foe, Zachary, coming to Bill Dotson Stadium this weekend. So that and more is coming at you sooner than later. But right now, I want to get back to the college football playoffs and the lay of the land. What I think you should expect tomorrow night. We'll take your calls on the subject as well. 706-0111. I would not expect LSU to jump Ohio State. And I think that's maybe the best thing that could happen to Ed Orgeron and the Tigers prior to Saturday's game against the Georgia Bulldogs. You need, heck, you should want that type of motivation. The opportunity to continue fanning the flames that, well, you're just not good enough or there's somebody better than you. That is exactly what you need. Again, having something in the tank for these final 2 to 3 games is pretty darn important. And I know you're going to call me and tell me and tweet at me that, hey, Ben, if you're 12-0 and you got a chance to win a natty ship, that ought to be enough. I would counter by asking if you think that last year's A&M game had anything to do with the way that this year's A&M game went. And the answer is, of freaking course it did. They dropped 50 on that team, and it could have been worse. Yes, it matters when you've got a little something, a chip on the shoulder, right? Some gas in the tank, something in the stomach, a reason why. I expect that LSU's reason why, one of them, will be because Ohio State will still be placed ahead of them. Yes, Ohio State beat a ranked team and LSU didn't this weekend. And yeah, I would tell you, because I watched a lot of both games, that I think Ohio State's complete defense left a lot to be desired, especially early against Shea Patterson and the Michigan Wolverines. So I think it's going to remain Ohio State, LSU, Clemson. That being said, I think there's a chance, and a good one, that with a win, LSU jumps Ohio State in the final college football playoff rankings prior to Christmas. Now, who comes after the top three? My gut tells me that right now it's Utah, Oklahoma, and then probably Baylor as your 4, 5, 6. I said it in the opening hour. I'll repeat it right now, and then we'll take a call. My gut also tells me, and look, I fed my gut a lot this Thanksgiving, so it's got as much wisdom as it's had in like 11 or 12 months. I think if chalk holds serve, college conference championship weekend that's coming up, I think that Oklahoma would jump Utah and get that final spot that Georgia vacates. And I forgot Georgia in my ranking, excuse me. Georgia will be 4. So the top 4, I think, will remain unchanged. And right after that, 5 through 7, it'll probably be Utah, Oklahoma, and then Baylor. I think that Oklahoma leapfrogs Utah, but I don't think Baylor would leapfrog Utah. So there you go. If LSU beats Georgia, that 4 spot, to me, would either be Utah or Oklahoma. I don't think there's any chance it could be Baylor. Just a couple of thoughts I'm going to share with you because we'll be talking about this between now and tomorrow night. Let's get out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Grant, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, great, man. I think it actually would be an LSU's benefit to stay number 2. I think you want to catch Clemson first before they have gotten battle tested, maybe in a tough game. They pull one out against Ohio State. They'll know how to win, whereas right now they haven't been in a tough game. I think you catch them now while you have a long time to prepare for them specifically, and then that way during that week after you beat Clemson, I think they'll be able to beat Ohio State either way. So I think you want to catch Clemson as soon as possible and not try to wait till the championship game. I'll hang up and listen. I appreciate it.
Anytime, Grant. And that's not bad rationale, not at all. Again, the Alabama model in recent years has shown us that the Tide, at least, are more vulnerable in the championship game than they are the semifinal because of the reasons that Grant just laid out. A month to prepare versus a week to prepare. Now, the thing is, I don't think LSU is going to fear anybody. But what I've told you again and again, I really think Clemson's got a chance to be the biggest potential thorn in LSU's side in these playoffs. A month versus a week to prepare is a really big deal, and Grant's right about that. But all things equal, just looking at it right now, I think that Clemson's defense is right up there with Ohio State's and Georgia's. And I think that they've got a little more know-how. And offensively, Trevor Lawrence is coming alive. I don't trust Georgia's offense enough to keep up with LSU. It's part of the reason I think that that 7-point spread that's been laid out early for Tigers, Dogs in Atlanta, it's hard for me to get behind. And again, that prodigious gut of mine believes it'll probably creep up higher than 7 by the time this week's over. I think you'll see a lot of money laid on the LSU side in the coming hours and days. So Georgia's offense, to me, can't keep up with LSU. Georgia is LSU during the latter years of the Les Miles era. Just a really, really, really elite version of some of those Les Miles teams. Seriously, it's the same thing. They don't trust the quarterback, they don't put faith in him, and it shows on the field. That's why Georgia was in a dogfight with a horrible Georgia Tech team at halftime of that game. If you just read the final score, it only got really exaggerated after intermission. Georgia played awful football in the first half of that game. Georgia can't keep up with LSU offensively. Out of the other two teams, Clemson and Ohio State, I think Clemson's got a better defense. Even without all those first-rounders on the D-line from a year ago, I just think Clemson's, ironically, because of that logic that was laid out by the committee last week, I think Clemson is the more complete team of those two. So maybe an extra few weeks to prepare for them, per Grant's point, would be a good thing. But, Clint, that's where I've got it right now. I don't think anything changes over the next couple of days when we get the college football playoff rankings out. I do think there's a good chance that if LSU beats number 4 Georgia, they leapfrog Ohio State before we get to the first round of the college football playoffs. But Grant says he thinks it'd be better if they stayed at number 2. That's interesting.
It is interesting, but I have to agree with you wholeheartedly. If they beat Georgia, because the fact that Georgia is right here, right now, the number 4 team, they'll more likely than not stay in that top 10. They'll play in a New Year's Six Bowl. I think you wind up looking at LSU. They jump Ohio State when those final rankings happen. Something we talked about last Wednesday. I think it stays that way.
Pay a little time to the Raging Cajuns in our opening segment of the 5 o'clock hour, because 10-2 is pretty remarkable. And I told you in the opening hour that the story is and should be what this team is doing and what they have a chance to do at App State on Saturday morning. But there is a secondary storyline, right? And it's the idea that poachers are out and they want them some Billy Napier. We're going to come back to that later in this hour because, again, I think it's an important topic. And in a nutshell, you can't get, I think, to some of the places that this guy eventually can climb to directly from Lafayette. You just can't. Doesn't really happen that way. I mean, even Chris Peterson, who's in the news today because he's stepping down from the Washington job after the bowl game. Yeah, Chris Peterson went from Boise to Washington, but after, I mean, a decade plus leading the Fighting Spuds up in Boise, right? And then where did he climb to? Washington. No, not Oregon, not USC. Washington. And so I think it's going to be difficult, potentially, for Napier to turn down a job like, say, Mississippi State or, say, Ole Miss, one of which actually has a vacancy now, the other doesn't, but is being speculated upon. I think it's going to be difficult to keep him around. But still, it's the exact place that you want to be if you're UL. Because now you could show a couple of things. One, look at the level of success on the field and in recruiting. You can do it here. You can win 10 games. And then also, look at what being here does for your mobility as a head coach. If Napier is to take a job at an SEC-level school, that's the type of treadmill you want to get on if you're the UL program. And that's the thing that I want to focus on. I could give a damn about the attendance and talking about that right now. I'm so fed up with that storyline. And good on Dr. Brian Maggard for giving some pushback. I've seen some of that on social media where people say, oh, but what about the gravel? No, not what about anything anymore. It's not really something that even deserves attention at this point. I hate to say it. I mean, respect to George Faust for the piece he did on KLFY TV 10. I've seen it. I get it. But it's just a beaten-up storyline at this point, and it stinks. Because this team does deserve more in terms of attendance, just like Bob Marlin's team that won 27 games a couple years ago. Same thing. And there will always be reasons, but the reality is this. What they're doing on the field, it's getting all of our attention. And it might just mean Napier gets an opportunity to move upward and onward. then the Cajuns would have to keep this train rolling. All right, we got to take our first time out in the 5 o'clock hour. When we return, Ruff and Rodriguez and more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Just about my favorite time of the week every week. And, you know, as we bring on Ruff and Rodriguez, Rufino's on the river, I know that LSU just gave out, I mean, so much sod, right? I mean, slabs and slabs of sod from Tiger Stadium. They had people lining up for hours. They opened that thing up at 4, and I think by like 4:01, they were done. So, Ruffin, welcome in. Were you out there grabbing some sod from Death Valley?
No, I got enough. I got enough sod inside my my body from being face planted by all those guys bigger than me back in the 80s. So I'm good with the sod, man.
Where does Joe Burrow putting on that EAUX Burrow jersey rank for just awesome Tiger Stadium moments for you?
Well, the fun part was I was on the field with my dad and my sons, you know, the Ruff and Rodriguez senior, myself, and then my Adam. So the three Ruffins on the field, and we were pretty close to it. And to see that, it was, you know, to see your son that excited, and then see your father excited. It's fun because it's such a, you know, when you're from Louisiana and we live it, we love it, we the whole deal. Everybody in Acadiana, everybody in Baton Rouge, everybody in the whole deal. To see a kid from Ohio within 2 years become Louisiana's favorite son is pretty remarkable. And you know, obviously, I was very, very honored to have in our suite at LSU, Michael Thomas, who was, you know, obviously the best receiver in the NFL in our opinion, but he was there, and he's, you know, he's a former teammate of Joe Burrow, and he was there for his friendship with some other friends that we have, and you know, he said Joe's always been the same. That's who he is. It's so much fun to watch, and the whole deal. And I can tell you, Ben, I don't know if I've ever been in a game that with that kind of feeling that we had. Now, I mean, 31-0 at halftime. I mean, it was really a boring game. I mean, it was, but everybody stayed. I mean, I thought at halftime people would leave. Then it stayed packed. You know, I've never seen Tiger Stadium, and I think it was because of Joe. I think it's because of what he brought, and people were respecting. And they wanted to see him walk off the field with the dignity that he brought to LSU. And it was great, man. It was a special moment for everybody. I'm really proud of Coach O and all the people that brought Coach O and him bringing Joe Burrow. It's only going to get better and better from here. It's a lot of fun to watch.
So let's go from Burrow to the man helping pull the strings in this offense, Joe Brady. A lot of innuendo that Texas, some others are starting to come calling. And I think behind closed doors, the understanding is that this thing might already be wrapped up and he's sticking around. What do you hear?
Good luck, Texas. No chance. I mean, there's not much else to say. Joe Brady is a young coach that he's having the time of his life. You know, he's engaged. He's getting married. No kids. He wants to build a little foundation first from the jump. And he knows. He's still young. He has a lot to learn. And why not make a couple of million dollars a year as a co-coordinator and learn from his opinion, who he thinks is one of the best play callers, and Steve Ensminger? Why not learn as much as you can and become the best you can? I can tell you, Texas is not a good job right now. Tom Herman, you know, we were looking at him, and I remember being last year talking to the board of supervisors and asking me, I'm like, don't even try it. You know, the guy is a gimmick coach. He's a genius, whatever they called him. He's a Ivy League, all that stuff. Man, you need to get somebody with heart. You need to get a Dabo Sweeney. You need to get an Ed Ogeron who can recruit, who can manage coaches, and who learns from all his mistakes. Tom Herman's not. He thinks he's smarter than everybody. He won't be at Texas in 3 years.
Not bad. Ruffin, tell us about what's going on right now. I know that Black Friday, you kicked off the special deal. It's, look, Cyber Monday. We're still rolling over at RuffinosLafayette.com and Ruffinos on the River.
Yeah, right. I mean, right now we have, you know, a little bit of time left of all night or whatever. What a great deal. You get $50 absolutely free with a $100 purchase, and just go online and do it. And it's all night at shopRuffinos.com. Just go to Google Ruffinos, whatever, and you'll find it. It's such an easy deal that, you know, you get it mailed right to you. It's a great package, and, you know, it's a gift that keeps on giving, man. It's a great deal. And I got a, I just finished up putting up a 40-foot, a beautiful Christmas tree here in Lafayette, and haven't decorated as far as ornaments and stuff yet, but that's going to be done tomorrow. And it's a great time, and beautiful. And every night, Ben, every night at Ruffinos on the River, the sky turns orange. The sun sets over River Ranch. The river, I mean, it's really one of the most beautiful places in the absolute state. And I'm so proud to be here, and I can't wait to light the Christmas tree this week.
So did you and your dad learn some things from putting that bad boy up a year ago?
Yeah, we did. We did. We learned a lot, you know. And, you know, it's all about the technique of fluffing, you know, the fluffing the branches and all that stuff. So I've learned a lot today on that. And, you know, I can't wait. I'm glad you mentioned my dad, because we are headed to Atlanta on Thursday, and I'm excited about it. We'll be on the radio all day for Friday, and it's going to be a great, great weekend.
It's frightening to consider branches on a 40-foot tree, but I'm right there with you, and I'm glad that it was you and your dad fluffing them and not me. Give me an early take on that LSU-Georgia ball game.
Well, I just think we match up well with them. You know, Georgia has some really good defensive linemen, and that. I mean, I'm just, Ben, I mean, when are we going to stop guessing who's going to stop LSU? I mean, that's my big thing, is like, all right, so here comes A&M. Yeah, here comes that. I mean, it's just team after team, and Joe Burrow makes them look like high schools or junior high. So why would we think anything different? And I know the line's a little bit, in the Georgia Dome, the Georgia fans will be pumped. They want to see it. It's going to be a lot of fun atmosphere, exciting, electric, and all that. But I'm sorry, man. Until somebody shuts down this offense, I had no reason to believe why we can't win and win big over every team we play by more than 20 points.
Hey, before you leave, I got to get your take on that Iron Bowl. Not just Alabama losing, but the way they lost to Auburn and Nick's reaction.
Don't shy about Nick's reaction. I mean, you know, Nick is he gets upset a lot of things, but for him to get that upset about officiating was mind-boggling to me. You know, all the plays that's gone his way over the years, the Patrick Peterson deal and his hometown, all the different things. I was really shocked by that. He's obviously frustrated on a lot of things right now. I think the number one thing with Nick, Ben, I don't think he likes being in Alabama. I don't think he ever has liked being in Alabama. I mean, it's all about money and success. But, his best friends live here, right here in Lafayette. His six or seven best friends. He wishes he was still at LSU. Everybody knows that. He's just frustrated. And, you know, and he's in a place where he doesn't want to be. And then he's not going to get to the championship game. And he knows he's limited as a coach right now with what he has, and you know all the injuries finally caught up with him and all these things, and he's just a frustrated dude, man. And you know, he's a competitor and he wants to win and at all costs. But you know what? This year he's not. So it's somebody else's turn.
We're finishing up with Ruff and Rodrigue, and Ruff, Clint's telling me we got another minute or two. Your reaction to Billy Napier and the Cajuns going 10-2, and boy, his name is everywhere these days as far as pursued head coaches.
Yeah, they're going to come after him hard, man. The thing is Billy is just – we knew this. I mean, when we sat there, the first recruiting deal, you and I, in your little booth doing the radio show, and I saw the coaches that he got in, I was like, Ben, he's going to win. He's going to win really, really fast.
Yep.
It's amazing what coaches can do, and – I think it's hard to tell. You know, look, I get the money part for a lot of these coaches. That's why I told that's why we kept saying you and I before the season. Cajun fans, get out to the stadium, pack the stadium, you know, let's make sure we keep this guy. Don't have any, you know, we got to make sure that when coaching staffs like this get the right opportunity. The ones that are open right now, I really don't see it for him. Hopefully he stays another year or two, but we'll see. But, you know, a lot of these coaches get kind of antsy and they think they can just build anywhere they want. But sometimes it's better to be patient, because I can tell you, you know, after not only this year, you give him another year, I mean, he could be another Central Florida, South Florida kind of deal where people are talking about why he's not in the top four.
It's fair. And it's always great catching up with you. Thanks for putting that monster tree up again. I'll be going to see it sooner than later.
Well, let's do it. Lafayette, let's have some fun this holiday season, man. Come see me at Rufino's. I can't wait. Can't wait for the holidays.
He's Ruffin Rodrigue. Again, reminding you to go to shoprufinos.com. You still got that gift card special. Get out to Rufino's on the river and enjoy a massive Christmas tree. Just monstrous with that beautiful sunset view that Ruffin's talking about. All right, we're halfway home in our 5 o'clock hour. Clint fielding a couple of calls during that interview. Call us back. We got time for you. Half an hour's worth of time before James Buehrs hops aboard at 6 to talk high school football semis and finals that are coming up this weekend. Don't go anywhere. A brief timeout and then more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Right back in. I've got some NFL on the brain, and I want to talk some of the superlatives from Week 13. More importantly, what it means with the playoff picture moving forward. Yeah, the Saints are right there in the thick of it. I'm going to save most of that for our final segment in the 5 o'clock hour. So on the other side of our next break, I am going to throw some shade, and it's NFL-themed as well. But if you want to jump in on LSU, the college football playoffs as we know them right now and kind of the way we're heading toward them, or the Raging Cajuns, some of the things we've said so far during the program, we got time for you in this segment. Hit us up at 706-0111. And while we wait on that, I'll dispense your daily reminder. It's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. You will fall in love with the inventory. The standing seam metal awnings, the retractable shades and screens, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. Beyond that, they're going to sit down with you at Patio Center and help you create a vision that they can fulfill. And they could do it before next spring or summer. Before we get to that next true barbecue season, you could be chilling in the shade, courtesy of Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. They are the kings of customization. And it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
I'll be quick today. In and out with your shade. I found it kind of funny, not going to lie to you, but also semi-cringeworthy in 2019 that Freddie Kitchens, former Alabama Crimson Tide quarterback and head football coach of the Cleveland Browns, Kitchens was cited days prior to Sunday's AFC North matchup with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And yeah, that would be a matchup of the Steelers and Mason Rudolph against the Browns and, you know, the guy that swung his helmet at people, Myles Garrett. Kitchens was wearing a Cleveland Browns colored shirt, Clint, that simply said, "Pittsburgh started it." Oh, that's pretty funny. I get why they are selling those T-shirts. I'd be surprised if they weren't. But boy, Freddie Kitchens wearing that in 2019 with everything that's on the line with Myles Garrett's career and livelihood. Ooh, that's interesting. So I'm not going to necessarily throw shade at Freddie Kitchens because, frankly, all the Steelers fans, they'll be doing that on their own. And also, well, the Steelers won that football game, so that's bad enough for Freddie Kitchens losing to a now third-string starting quarterback.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Of course, he also may not be wrong. Mason Rudolph absolutely started a lot of that, but interesting. Freddie Kitchens busting out the Pittsburgh Started It t-shirt. From Freddie Kitchens, we go to the Ardco Equipment Hotline, and Freddie is waiting for us. Freddie, welcome in. What you got for us today?
Well, I was listening earlier in the show, and you mentioned all kinds of scenarios, except the fact that what if Georgia would beat LSU? How would that affect the top four playoff scene?
All right, Freddie, I got you. I got you, and I'll go down that road with you. Thank you for the call. I've addressed that topic a lot on the show over the last 3 or 4 weeks post-Bama, but I'll stay to my talking point. I'll stick to my guns. I believe that LSU is in no matter what. I told you I thought they could lose one of these final two games, A&M or Georgia, and they're still in. Now, at least one major publication disagrees with me. Maybe this is a badge of honor, considering the run for the mothership as of late. But, Clint, their offshoot, 538. You're shaking your heads up, down, so yes, you know what I'm talking about? Okay, good. You still got a pulse, too. It's good for our listeners to know.
Yes.
So, 538 predicted that if LSU were to lose to Georgia, I think they gave a percentage. It was in the teens for sure. I believe it was 17%. So they give LSU a 12-1, fresh off a loss to UGA, about a 17% chance of crashing the Final Four, which, of course, I patently disagree with. And it's not Homer Radio. It's just a fact. We've gotten to this point so many times where we've had the conversation, what happens if undefeated Alabama loses to Georgia or Florida in the SEC title game? And we all unanimously agree, you can't ignore how dominant they've been during the regular season. They're still going to get in. Why should it be any different with LSU now? I firmly believe that LSU, even with the loss to Georgia, I mean, it would have to be like a butt spanking. LSU would have to get beat by like 24 in that game or more. I believe that if LSU loses, they are still in the playoffs and they will be the number four seed. Their resume is that strong. They've been that complete from start to finish this season. They've won on the road at arguably the toughest place to win in America, Bryant-Denny Stadium. They've won on the road at Texas, which, hey, Oklahoma technically didn't even have to do that. They get to play on a neutral site in Dallas. And then at home, they have defended the turf, which everybody apparently just went and gobbled up outside of Death Valley. They've defended that turf against top 10 Florida, top 10 Auburn. I don't know what else you would ask LSU to do. And so even if they are to stumble to the number four team in the country, yes, I think they would outpace Utah, who's playing like number 13 Auburn. And yes, Auburn, listen to me, Utah playing number 13 Oregon. And I think they would outpace Oklahoma, who is playing, I think, number 7 or 8 Baylor. So yeah, I get it. But Oklahoma's loss was to Kansas State. LSU's would be the number four team in the country, 60 miles from their campus. I'm sticking to my guns on this one. Short of getting absolutely blown out, embarrassed, and Joe Burrow gets hurt, I know everybody's knocking on wood right now, a loss by LSU to Georgia will not eliminate the Tigers in the college football playoffs. I still firmly believe that. All right, let's hit our final break in this 5 o'clock hour. When we return, I told you I've got the NFL on my brain. A couple of teams that only had one loss prior to yesterday now have two. What does it mean? We shall discuss. After a brief timeout, you've got that and more. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station. And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. Live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Quick update on our sink or swim question of the day as we return. Then we launch into some NFL talk coming down the home stretch of this 2019 season. We asked you earlier, about an hour and a half ago, which event pleased you the most this Thanksgiving weekend? LSU beating A&M, the Saints beating the Falcons, or Alabama losing to Auburn. Pretty good response. And yeah, we probably omitted one. Okay, we definitely did. And we're being reminded of that. But let's explore the space, CD. Larry W., all three. Yeah, that's the right answer. They all brought you great joy. Sean M., Saints. Nothing like a side of carved falcon to go along with cranberry sauce. Cowboys and 49ers loss was a bonus, too. We are on our way to the number one seed. We'll talk about that momentarily, but he's absolutely right. Damon M., all the above, and add in Cowboys losing to the Bills. See, I forgot. In my rush to clown Saban and the Tide for losing the way they did and the responses afterward, I forgot that the Cowboys losing brought a lot of joy as well. Kevin B., UL having a record-setting season. We've talked plenty of Raging Cajuns on the program today, but a pretty prudent reminder that we probably could have had them in here as well. And yeah, we got one of those on Twitter as well, CD, at 1037 The Game. We had a write-in response, I hate Atlanta, foul clowns, and then this awesome gif of your boy, Shy Tuttle, stiff-arming Matt Ryan into 2020. And finally, we've got another, at Mr. Cajun 1234, Louisiana beats Monroe. So clearly, the icing of the kicker and putting icing on the cake of a 10-2 regular season brought a lot of joy to a lot of people in Cajun country.
It was just a great weekend overall, and just the state of Louisiana when it comes to football. I mean, not just that. I mean, we also had Nichols get a win over North Dakota over the weekend, the FCS playoffs. The Southern Grambling game was absolutely phenomenal. If you weren't enjoying football at any level this past weekend, I don't know what you were doing.
No, I'm with you. All right, let's go into the NFL talk. We'll take some calls as well. Might be your last time to get a call in. I want to go deep with James Buers in about 11 or 12 minutes. STM, LCA, Acadiana, all alive with an opportunity to win a football state championship. So we'll have James Buers at 6. We'll probably run for a while there. But we'll go NFL now, and you can call in 706-0111. Two different teams, one in the NFC, one in the AFC, entered Week 13 with only the lonely one loss, right? And they both went down. And both of them lost on the road to pretty good teams that I think are still on the climb. The Ravens beat previous one-loss team, San Fran, in just a dogfight in the rain over in Maryland. Game-winning kick by who else? Justin Tucker. That's basically all Justin Tucker does. And the one time he misses one, we put him on a meme and it just lives for eternity. But the Ravens beat San Fran, and now the Saints really are in control of their own destiny, especially if they win this weekend against San Francisco. Just a hellacious stretch, frankly, for the 49ers. They won the first leg, they lost the second leg, and they'll be at New Orleans noon on Sunday. The other one-loss team that lost was also on the road, as I mentioned. The Patriots last night lost in Houston. Texans raced out to a 14-3 lead, and they held on with a little flea flickerish, if you will. I don't even know what to call it. Reverse pass, almost looked like a lateral from Nuke Hopkins to Deshaun Watson. I don't know what you call it. I just know that it was crazy athletic to watch it. And so now the Patriots are starting to really stumble, I mean with regularity, offensively, and they are a two-loss team. So the Ravens have a chance to secure home field advantage in the AFC. The Saints have that same opportunity in the NFC. And I would still tell you, Clint, I think there's a team that's playing tonight that everybody is maybe conveniently forgetting about. There's a reason that Russell Wilson is in that MVP conversation, probably behind Lamar Jackson, maybe neck and neck with a guy like Pat Mahomes. Or you could even say Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, insert stud running back. But Russell Wilson is having himself a year, and his team has as few of losses as anybody else in the NFC right now. Statistically, he's been fantastic, but you watch what he does, and he is just everything for that team. If they beat the Vikings tonight at home, and we'll have that game on Acadiana Sports Station, Vikes at the Seahawks, Monday Night Football, I think that there's a really, really good chance that you're looking at Saints, Seahawks, 1-2 as your two teams with a bye. And you got to like the Saints' chances at a rematch with the Seahawks in New Orleans. They beat them already without Drew up in the Great Northwest. I think they could complete a season sweep if it comes down to that. But I'm with our guest earlier, Gus Kattengill. I'd rather not have to go through Saints-Vikings this season if I can avoid it. That one typically doesn't end well for whatever reason. Saints need to win this Sunday, and I think that a win tonight for Seattle might just set up in the Saints' favor long term.
It really should set everything up nicely in the long term when you just look at it. But my goodness, you brought up Russell Wilson and just how the NFC is. Is it me or just is the NFC just so much markedly better compared to the AFC? Just because you look at what you've got, like the top three seeds right now are all only with two losses on their record right here, right now. It definitely is just crazy to think about that.
I don't know if I completely agree, right? I don't know if I completely agree that the NFC is better. Maybe you could argue more top-heavy, but let's look at the AFC right now. Two-loss Baltimore, two-loss New England, and I know that New England's losing some steam, but I could look at some other teams right now in the AFC that are gaining steam with three or four losses, right? I mean, that Kansas City team is really starting to come on. A couple weeks ago, we looked at a team apiece that was everybody's flavor of the month last year and this year, kind of the same feeling. Rams in the NFC, Chiefs in the AFC. Out of those two, the Chiefs have really started to explode. And so I don't think you can just dead and bury Kansas City right now. I look over on that side as well, a couple of other teams that I just don't know that you can completely look past. A couple of teams that, frankly, aren't that far behind the pace. I know in the AFC North, it's hard to really get excited about anybody, frankly. I know the Steelers right now have an opportunity to take that division. Oakland just lost a game at 7-4. I don't know how sexy that the Titans are, but that AFC has some teams that you at least have to have some respect for, and I think Buffalo at 9-3 is probably on that list. And certainly at 8-4, I still think Houston's on that list.
Especially after last night's victory, I think the Texans are definitely the team that's going to wind up being the prohibitive favorite heading into the last month of the season when it comes to locking down the AFC South, excuse me. But I think the Bills, I think they've been helped a lot because of the fact you look at their schedule, it's been relatively soft. I think that's a big reason why their record is the way it is right now.
I'm okay with maybe consenting with more top-heavy, right? The NFC as opposed to the AFC. But, the Bills' schedule to me is incredibly interesting. They've won three in a row and four out of five. But the way they come down this home stretch, they've got the Ravens and the Patriots and the Steelers for that matter. So I guess here's my point. Three out of the final four games for Buffalo, they're going to play teams that right now would be in the playoffs in the AFC. They have a chance to genuinely control their own destiny in the AFC North, or excuse me, the AFC East, and that never happens. And they finished the season with the Jets, who, of course, are terrible and just lost to the previously defeated Cincinnati Bengals. So I don't know, man. I look at this Bills team, and they don't ask their quarterback to do too much. He's kind of like a poor man's Lamar Jackson, to be honest, right? His running style is different. But both of those guys, when I look at, I really feel this way too. I look at Lamar Jackson, and he didn't throw for 180 yards yesterday, right? And yet they won a really, really big football game.
Yeah.
I look at the Bills right now, and I think there's a real chance that Josh Allen could have similar type of games with the way their team is built. Solid running game, really, really, really solid defense. I think that Josh Allen, could have a 180 yards passing, 60 yards rushing type of game, and they could beat a lot of people right now. They have found a model that's the exact opposite of what LSU and Joe Burrow are doing. But in the modern NFL, somehow, some way, dude, they're 9-3, and they're not just beating bad teams anymore. Although maybe the Cowboys are bad. Boom.
Yes.
Little Cowboys dig a couple days after Thanksgiving.
Exactly. You got to love it. But I have to, it's just the fact I feel like the way the Bills are, it's definitely, you brought up LSU. I think that's perfect kind of how it is with them. You're not having to rely on the quarterback putting the team on his back like Joe Burrow. It feels like maybe LSU from a couple years ago.
Or Georgia this year.
Yeah.
There's a reason, again.
Hopefully Swift's okay for Saturday.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'd love to see DeAndre Swift competing. You know that Georgia's going to be without a stud receiver who played his way out of the first half by throwing a punch at a Georgia Tech player late in that ballgame in Bobby Dodd Stadium. But, why don't we come back around to that? Let's circle LSU-Georgia. Tell you what we'll do. We'll take our final hour break. We'll come back with James Buehr's high school football playoff-centric and then I'll get back to LSU Georgia. More of my thoughts on that game. That's a good idea, CD. So that's how we'll wrap up the program today. Another half hour of B2BS, and then we'll have that big NFC game. Monday Night Football, Vikings at the Seahawks. You need to stick with us. We got more Bumper to Bumper Sports and then a little MNF, all on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by. Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Back in and ready to roll. It's hour three of three, and you are dialed into Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next half hour, we get you ready for Monday Night Football. The end of Week 13 in the league is coming up tonight. Vikings at the Seahawks. That'll be a whole lot of fun. Of course, we've got semifinal, final action in the high school football playoffs. That's going to be a whole lot of fun. Games played here, there, and everywhere, quite literally in Louisiana, we must discuss. So let's bring aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline. James Buers with the Acadiana Advocate. James, it was good seeing you Friday night. Good talking with you today, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well, Ben. Just getting ready for, I guess, the home stretch of the high school football season with select championships this week and non-select championships next week. And we've already got two select finalists finalized, and we could have another one next week in Acadiana, who's playing Zachary in the 5A semifinals on Friday.
Why don't we start right there? We'll go with that 5A ball game. It's number one, Acadiana, haven't lost all season. I mean, doing something that's absolutely historic at this point. And they're taking on a perennial power, a group that was maybe slightly underseeded this year. Number five, Zachary. They dusted off Ruston last week, 35-27 in North Louisiana. Acadiana, of course, coming off a 34-7 win over Airline. Handicapped that one at Bill Dotson Stadium, Acadiana versus Zachary.
Yeah, I know it's a fascinating matchup, and obviously Acadiana and Zachary have some history. You know, they played last year in the quarterfinals. Zachary eliminated Acadiana on their way to their second straight 5A championship. And then in 2016, I believe it was, Zachary beat Acadiana in the quarterfinals on the way to the state championship, or excuse me, the semifinals, so they lost to West Monroe. West Monroe ended up losing to Landry Walker that year in the championship game. But these teams obviously know each other well. Zachary is as seasoned as they come as far as state championship runs. I think they've won now 13 straight playoff games. If you count, you know, the two state championship runs the last couple of years and the three playoff games they've won up to this point. And their quarterback, Keelan Brown, has been kind of the engine behind it throughout that. You know, he's a Memphis commitment, just a tremendous dual threat quarterback, both can really throw it and can really run it. And they have a terrific wide receiver in Chris Hilton, who's probably going to be a Power 5 receiver by the time he's coming out of high school. So the challenges are certainly evident to Acadiana, but I just love the way this Acadiana team has played all year. They've shown zero signs of complacency, even at times when in the past you felt like they might have a game where they slipped up or didn't play their best. They still find ways to win, and a lot of times they're obliterating some of these teams that they're playing, frankly. And, you know, this past week they started a little slow. You know, they were only up 14-0 at halftime, but their defense, who's, you know, I wrote about it this past week, they've kind of rode the wave of Acadiana's offensive explosion, having to be on the field a lot more in recent weeks, just because Acadiana is scoring so quickly. The defense is kind of what drove them to that victory. And, you know, they held Airline to, what, 154 passing yards. I mean, that's a pretty impressive night by the Acadiana defense. So congratulations to the Rams for getting back to the semifinals, and we'll see if they can, you know, kind of exact some revenge against Zachary this week.
Let's move to the select side with our guy James Buers of the Acadiana Advocate. And we'll go to Division III for the first time, LCA. The Knights have elevated themselves into that division. Of course, they're two-time reigning Division IV state champs. They're going to take on
St. Charles. I'm curious what you know about that team and what you think about this matchup. And knowing that the game's going to be at Cajun Field, that one could be very interesting, James.
Yeah, no, it is interesting, and obviously it's sort of a home game for LCA. You know, they're playing at Cajun Field instead of at their home stadium, but still being able to play in Lafayette and theoretically have more fan support than you would, you know, even in New Orleans is certainly beneficial for them and for STM, and I'm sure we'll touch on STM later. But, yeah, you know, I don't know a ton about St. Charles at this point. You know, they played Catholic High this past weekend and what sounded like an epic double overtime game. You know, I think the difference in the game was a blocked extra point after Catholic scored to tie the game in the second overtime. You know, I've heard about their defensive end, Mason Narcisse, who's committed to Tulane. He's obviously a really good player. But, you know, the way LCA, similar to Acadiana, the way they've played the entire season leads me to believe that they should win this game. And I think that the biggest the thing I was most pleasantly surprised by is the reemergence of tailback Logan Gabriel for LCA. He had a really dominant performance against Dunham. I think if anybody's seen any of the highlights on Twitter or on TV, he was running through, over, and around people all night. And when he's good, the LCA offense can be really dynamic. And I think Errol Rogers has continued to improve as a passer. They're obviously been really good defensively all year. So this is an LCA team that I feel like can match up with basically anybody in the state. You know, they played Acadiana tough for three quarters earlier this season, and look where Acadiana is now. So I would assume that they could beat St. Charles Catholic on Saturday, but it should be an interesting matchup nonetheless. You know, Frank Monica is a terrific coach and one of the best the state has ever seen for sure.
And you're right, that game, LCA St. Charles Catholic, will be played Saturday evening, early evening, inside of Cajun Field, about 24 hours prior, 23 to be exact. STM will have one of the rarest things that you could ever imagine, at least in the modern era, James, of high school football in our state. They're going to have a home field championship game, and of course they're going to do that against your alma mater. It's going to be STM De La Salle from Cougar Stadium. Early thoughts on that ball game, because I know that De La Salle beat the brakes off of Turlings over in Pan American 2 weeks ago, but they had a struggle against U High last week at Uelman, Tulane Stadium. So what should we make of the Cavs, and what do we think about this ball game?
Yeah, no, De La Salle is obviously playing really tremendous football as of late. And, you know, I think they had an injury at the quarterback position early in the season, but they seemed to kind of settle in. And, you know, they did it with defense last week, won on a field goal as time expired. So clearly, you know, it's a team that can, you know, it looks to be pretty complete. But, you know, I think STM's going to have all the motivation in the world, aside from just playing for a state championship. This was a De La Salle team that eliminated them a couple years in the semifinal in a really great game at Tulane Stadium. And, you know, it just seems like STM is starting to kind of get back, return to that form they had early in the season when they were a really dominant football team. And I know St. Louis gave them a good fight, especially in the first half, but STM was able to pull away with another really strong game by Caleb Holstein, who is now, I think, eclipsed 9,000 yards for his career and over 100 touchdowns, which is an incredible total for a high school quarterback, but to think he's basically did it in 2.5 seasons because he didn't really become the full-time starter until halfway through his sophomore year is pretty impressive. So similar to Acadiana and LCA, I just really like the way STM is playing at this point in the season, and frankly, I would expect them to win on Friday.
Coming down the stretch with James Beers of the Acadiana Advocate, I'll get your 2 cents. This isn't anything factual in base. I want an actual opinion from you here. The idea that the Division IV title game, Wachita Christian, Catholic Point Kapee, it's going to be played in the Dome, and a really good piece by our guy Adam Hunsucker with the Monroe News Star. Both of these schools, after winning semifinal games, James, they wrote letters and petition Eddie Bonine and the LHSAA, hey, we want to play it in the Dome. They got unanimous support from the board, and so boom, you will have one of the four select games that's going to be played in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. I didn't think that was going to be possible. I'm not sure many people did. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, you know, it was something I kind of heard some whispers about, that Wachita Christian was one of the select schools that was not in favor of not playing their games in the Superdome, if that makes sense. They wanted to play in the Superdome, and I guess because Catholic Point Kapee got there, you know, maybe it kind of changed their perspective on it. And, you know, it when a team has never been to the state championship game or hasn't been in a long time, and they want that experience of bringing their kids down to New Orleans and playing in, you know, what I like to refer to the mecca of football in Louisiana, the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, I think sometimes it's worth it to put in the extra effort to play in the Superdome. So really you can't, you know, fault them for wanting to do that. And, you know, the LHSA was able to work it out scheduling-wise. That was the one thing I was curious about. I was wondering, well, if they were only planning to have 5 state championship games for the Prep Classic with the non-select teams, well, how did they, you know, how are they going to add a 6th one? But I guess it was just as simple as telling the Superdome people, hey, we're going to play an extra game at this time. But, yeah, I mean, I guess my reaction is, you know, good for them. You know, that's, if that's what they wanted to do, then, you know, so be it. And obviously they'll have an extra week to prepare for each other too. So I guess that's an added bonus. But I'm sure that, you know, the select schools that decided to play their games, you know, whether it be STM at home, LCA at Cajun Field, or the Division I championship, which looks like it's going to be at Tulane Juelman Stadium, I'm sure they're all happy about their situations at this point.
Hey, remind our listeners, James, who's playing in that Division I title game?
Your Catholic of Baton Rouge Bears versus the Rumble Raiders. So should be a fascinating matchup between those two teams. That's a really, really, two really, really good teams.
Just was seeking a little confirmation there. I appreciate it. Catholic shutting out Curtis at Olympia Stadium in Baton Rouge did make me quite happy, though. I'm not going to lie to you about that. So, and you know what? For those scoring at home, we've now got 4 select title games that are going to be played. Just to recap, Juelman Stadium, where Tulane plays, the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, Cajun Field, and then STM's Cougar Stadium. So this is not anywhere near how I saw this thing playing out. I think it's absolutely bizarre that we didn't know this in some cases until a week, 2 weeks prior to the game. But I guess that's how it came out in the wash, James.
Yeah, no, it is bizarre. And, you know, I guess that's just how the, you know, how some of these things go sometimes, you know. But I'm just glad we're here. You know, let's get the games going. You know, these teams have been preparing for these, you know, for this for a while. It's great that the Acadiana area has 3 that have chances to play for state championships. Not just play for state championships, but I think all 3 have legit shots at winning, especially if Acadiana can win this weekend against Zachary.
Very well said, as always, James. And it was bizarre as well, but me, you, Blaine Viator, were sitting atop bleachers covering that game between Karen Crow and Warren Easton at Pan American Stadium Friday night. I'm glad it didn't rain. I'm glad it wasn't overly cold. But that was fun. Again, a good game, but it was good to see you out there, James. Thanks again for coming aboard today.
Absolutely, Ben. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, and that is no joke. Quite literally, in case you didn't catch it, Black Friday night on Z105.9, we called that game from the bleachers. We were told press box would be full. Again, I've been in that press box and called a game before, so I get it. There's no bad blood. I mean, Easton's coaches said, you can come here, you can call the game, just can't do it from the press box. And it's one of those stadiums where you can't get on top of the press box. Well, all right, what are my options? So we get there early, and we quite literally ran 2 connected power cords. I think one extension cord was probably about 50 feet, the other 25 feet, and we needed every darn inch. We ran that thing coming from the bathroom, duct taped it a million times above the walkway to the men's bathroom, around the stadium, behind the stadium, and then boop, up the bleachers we went, and we called the game from the bleachers. So it went okay, with the exception of 1 or 2 little internet outages. But other than that, a pretty fun experience, and that's a really good Warren Easton team. The kid Shady Clayton in the backfield that's going to Colorado, it's a great player. And so I know we talked about the 3 teams, LCA, STM, Acadiana, that are moving on. A lot of good football teams from our area. Their season came to a halt this past Friday night. I know that we called one of those games, Karen Crow at Easton. Shout out to Westgate, understanding what they did, coming within 2 points of Neville up north. That's a heck of an accomplishment for Ryan Antoine's team in the state quarterfinals. Of course, Bro Bridge loses that car, which I think is probably the 2nd best team in 4A behind Lakeshore. So, yeah, there you have it. A lot of team seasons came to a close. Lorville as well. But Jennings as well. You know what? Shame on me. I didn't get to Jennings with our guy James, but the fact that they beat number 2 Sterlington, they're into the state semifinals as a number 23 seed, that is just really, really cool stuff. And so we'll end this segment. I'll remind you of something that I brought out of the bag earlier in the show, but for our 6 o'clock crowd, speaking of really cool stuff, this show on Friday will be live from just outside of Cougar Stadium. and what they're calling, I believe, the Championship Fun Fest. That's right. They're going to create like a College Game Day type of atmosphere outside of the STM and De La Salle game, and I'll be right there. If you've listened long enough, you know I've done this before. We were there a couple of years back before STM and Parkview in the playoffs. We got to take in the Cougar Walk and everything that went with that. And so we'll do it again, but this time I think it's going to be a little more all-inclusive in terms of both sides of the aisle. So they're going to have this huge fan fest, and they're wanting fans from both sides. I mean, the school from New Orleans, STM from right here in our backyard. Everybody get together. Let's have some fun. Look, they're going to have a band, a DJ, all kind of games. I mean, food trucks, everything. And so you know you got to have bumper-to-bumper sports inside the building, or at least outside of the building and in the parking lot. I'm excited about that. B2BS Friday coming live from just outside of Cougar Stadium. Stick with us. We got one final segment to go, and then Monday Night Football. After a brief timeout, we conclude Bumper to Bumper Sports. Back in for the final time on this Monday. Hey, first Monday of December, and we're doing our thing, Bumper to Bumper Sports with you and bringing you home on 103.7 The Game. Ben and Clint and Monday Night Football coming awfully soon, and a worthy capper to week 13 in the NFL. Vikings at the Seahawks. Both of these teams right now, I think, are pretty fair competition for the Saints when it comes to a battle for home field advantage, especially in the wake of the 49ers' second loss of the season yesterday. A couple of teams with two losses right now. Seattle, well, they're one of them, and they've got a chance tonight if they can get past 8-3 Minnesota to, I believe, put themselves in the driver's seat in that NFC West. Do not forget about this. Seahawks have won four in a row, as I mentioned. They're a team with only two losses, 9-2 on the season. You look at the schedule for Seattle. They got this one tonight, and, yeah, they've got those 49ers at home in week 17. And so there's an opportunity that Seattle might be right up there with the Saints as two teams that will be at home the first week of these playoffs. Just something to keep in mind. Saints, of course, already own any potential tiebreaker over the Seahawks. They went up to the Great Northwest and beat up on them birds without Drew Brees. That was one of the really, I think, first telltale signs that life with Bridgewater could be okay, if the defense and special teams play the way they did that afternoon in Seattle. And so we'll see. I mean, obviously, Saints-Niners coming up is huge. If the Saints win that one, I mean, they've got every bit of a reason to believe they'll be the number one overall seed. You'll have the tiebreaker over Seattle. You'll have it over San Fran at that point. And, of course, you'll have put L's on both of those teams, which only furthers your calls. So enough of the NFL. We'll have them here shortly, 6:30, the pregame show, kickoff not long after 7:10 p.m., all on 103.7 The Game. I do want to circle back, while I've got a handful of moments left, I want to circle back to LSU, Georgia, and the championship games that we have on tap that come to us this weekend. Again, I'll start Bulldogs, Tigers. I said this early in the show, and I will repeat now, I'm a bit surprised with the point spread. I get it that Vegas, hey, they don't rule everything in this world on B2BS, but they give us some pretty good indicators of what the court of public opinion says, right? And they say that LSU is only a 7-point favorite over the Georgia Bulldogs. I don't know, and again, I follow both of these teams pretty closely, I don't know that Georgia has particularly done anything, you know, in the big marquee games this year, maybe outside of the Florida game, to really show that they deserve that type of respect in this game. And I know, before anybody reminds me that Athens is only, you know, an hour away from the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, look, I went to school there. I know, I get it. Don't need the geography lesson. I have been to plenty of LSU-Georgia SEC championship games. I mean, they do it, I mean, seemingly, what, 03, 05, 11? Now they're going to do it again in 19. This thing isn't always a red and black blowout affair. And it certainly isn't always dominated by that type of sound inside of, well, what's now Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It would used to be the old Georgia Dome. LSU fans are always well represented at this game. it doesn't feel necessarily like a road game for LSU. And so when you just look at the merits, again, some of this is playing the game on paper. I get that. But when you look at the merits of these two teams, I don't believe Georgia's offense has shown enough to prove that they belong within a touchdown of LSU. I just don't. Could it play out differently Saturday at 3 o'clock? Sure, it could. But right now, I think the type of role that LSU is on, I mean, you want to play the comparative game type of scenario? Georgia just played that same A&M team that LSU did. They just had them inside Sanford Stadium. That ball game was 19-13. I understand that it rained. Again, don't throw that at me and try to sway me with those type of facts. LSU has been a two-touchdown favored type of team when I try to compare these teams, and I've thought about the game, I mean, for a month. We all have, right? From the moment that LSU won in Bryant-Denny Stadium, you've been thinking about LSU-Georgia. That would be the last step before LSU and its first ever college football playoff appearance. And I've been telling you, I thought it'd be about a 12.5, 13, maybe as much as 14-point spread. I'm intrigued by that line. I am. And I know that Georgia scored 56, mostly in the second half drubbing of Georgia Tech in Atlanta this last week. LSU's not Georgia Tech. And this offense right now is slicing through everybody like a Ginsu knife. And so I'm just curious. Strength on strength, right? LSU's offense, Georgia's defense, how's it going to play out? Georgia's been able to put a few teams in headlocks this year. They did it to what's been a good but not a great Notre Dame team. They did it, again, to what's been a good but not a great Florida team. I think that this is a great LSU team, right? At 12-0, second time the program's done that in 8 years. And what happened? LSU-Georgia, December 2011, after LSU's undefeated regular season, a bit of a pummeling, especially with the Honey Badger going ape with punt returns in that ball game. So it's interesting. We look around the college football playoff landscape. Utah beats Oregon. And are they in? Boy, I think they've got one heck of a case. I do. Oklahoma, Baylor. Again, Oklahoma wins that. They've got a heck of a case. My gut tells me now, I'll repeat what I said earlier in the program. My gut tells me now, if Chalk holds and Utah and Oklahoma win and LSU wins, I think you're going to see Oklahoma slide into these playoffs. Will it be fair to Utah? Eh, maybe not. But I do believe that at this point, Oklahoma would have more quality W's. That's just how I see it. Some other games that are interesting, Ohio State, 16-point favorites over Wisconsin. Clemson, 29-point favorites over Virginia. They're going to win, and they're going to get in. But who's going to join them, and who is going to join LSU? We're going to find out sooner than later. Got to thank our guests today, Gus Kattengill, Ruffin Rodrigue, and, of course, James Buers earlier this hour. Big-time program for a Monday. Enjoy your Monday Night Football. We'll be back tomorrow. We're bringing Shade Dixon with us to talk some Cruton and Dean Leggy. A live report from Athens, Georgia, behind enemy lines to talk Bulldogs before the matchup with the Tigers this Saturday. Again, enjoy the ball game. For Clint, I'm Ben, and this has been Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.